The Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland has published its 2020 National Energy Balance, showing that energy-related CO2 emissions are 11.5% lower in 2020, that most significant emissions reduction since 2009 recession, and is largely due to COVID-19 impacts. Total energy consumption is down by almost 9%, largely due to reductions in transport use. What does all of that mean, I wonder, and what is its significance in terms of the environment? Let's find out more now, because to tell us about that is the Energy Statistics Analyst with the SEAI, Dr. Dennis Dineen. Dr. Dineen, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Sam.
Thanks
for having me. Good morning.
So, 2020 National Energy Balance, what does that mean on the tin?
Yeah, so I work for SEAI and we're responsible for producing the official national statistics on energy use. And so the balance is basically the accounting, the final accounting of exactly what energy we use and exactly what sectors. And we've just released the final accounting figures for the year 2020. And you've laid out the highlights there very well. So the main findings that we found for the year 2020 was that energy reduced by about 10%. And then, you know, the obvious main driver for that, of course, was the COVID-19 pandemic, which had such wide-ranging impacts on all aspects of our lives. And one of the main kind of impacts of COVID-19, of course, was on our personal mobility during, you know, the year 2020. Obviously, all the travel restrictions, both in terms of, you know, not being able to go more than about 5 kilometres from your home in your private car. And also another big aspect, of course, was that international aviation was extremely restricted. And those are two areas where we actually saw by far the biggest effects of the COVID-19 pandemic.
When you talk about energy, just define define what that means.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's a good point, actually, just to bring it back. So, yeah, energy, I guess we use it in all aspects of our lives, you know, in almost everything we do, in all parts of the economy. There's often three ways we kind of categorize energy. There's a couple of different ways you can think about it, but one of the useful ways is to think about it as heat, transport, and electricity. So transport is, yeah, all the fuel, the petrol and diesel you put in your car or you know, used by trucks to bring goods and services all over the country. Electricity, obviously, every time you turn on a light switch, or, you know, it's just used in every aspect of our lives. And then heat is basically kind of everything else, but it's basically how you heat your homes, also how we heat businesses, the energy used for you know, for factories or driving industrial processes. So really it cuts across everything.
And we find that it's responsible for under just about 60% of Ireland's total greenhouse gas emissions. Just, I mean, there are people out there who still would be saying, what the hell are greenhouse gas emissions and why are they so important? And all this carbon footprint that we're talking about. People hear these terms, greenhouse gas emissions. They hear things like carbon footprint. And I would dare to say that there's a lot of people out there who still haven't a clue what that means and why it's so significant.
Yeah, you could be right, Clem. And look, it's really important, I suppose, that we all start kind of, you know, realizing, yeah, what's going on here. So, yeah, look, as you say, our energy use is responsible for about 60% of our greenhouse gas emissions. So what is a greenhouse gas emission? So when you burn a fossil fuel, it gives off carbon dioxide. That's really the most main greenhouse gas emission that there is. And when carbon dioxide goes into the atmosphere, it basically acts as a blanket over the earth and it warms it. And that's always been the case. That's, you know, there's a natural amount of CO2 that's natural. But for about the last 150 years, we've been burning massive amounts of fossil fuels and that's pumping massive amounts of extra greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And that's actually just warming the whole planet. And that's not as benign as it might sound. It's because we're adding extra warmth and extra energy into the planet, we're totally disrupting the whole planet's climate and energy system.
This is what's leading to, for example, the climatic changes that we've seen, those extreme changes that we've seen, the way the seasons have all seemed to have changed.
Exactly, Clem, yeah. I mean, we used to call it, I guess, global warming, and I think we're moving away from that term because it maybe doesn't convey just how drastic and just how important it is. So, you know, climate breakdown is the kind of the better way of describing it, actually. It's not just a nice warming, it's actually a complete breakdown in the climate system that, you know, humans have basically adapted to for the last 10,000 years. And it could have very, very serious consequences over the next, you know, 50, 100 years on every aspect of our lives, on the habitability of huge parts of the planet of our agricultural systems. We'll, you know, see much more intense storms, droughts, rainfall events. So it really, you know, potentially has very drastic impacts on humans and on the whole natural world, you know, on a huge amount of the species potentially threatened by this. So it's a really critical threat, and it's really important that we all start realizing that, you know, we need to transition away from the fossil fuel use that's driving the bulk of the...
Now, that's a very good explanation, and I do like that term climate breakdown far more than global warming, which I always thought, well, bring it on, you know, we could do with a bit of warmth in the thing. Climate breakdown is much better. So then, just briefly, what is this carbon footprint about?
Yeah, so carbon, I guess, it relates to that gas, carbon dioxide. So as I said, whenever we use any kind of fossil fuel, and that would be oil, coal, gas, all of these things, what you're actually burning in that fuel is actually the carbon in the fuel. And when you burn it, it produces carbon dioxide. So that's what your carbon footprint is. It's basically how much carbon dioxide you're responsible for.
I think that's been a real contribution to a greater understanding of what greenhouse gas emissions are, the production of carbon dioxide, and the carbon footprint would summarise our actions, how we contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. I hope that's much, much clearer to everybody else. Your CEO was quoted as saying that the 2020 energy balance confirms that we achieved our EU transport target and came very close on the national renewable energy electricity target. It also confirms, though, that we have not reached our overall 2020 renewable energy target and that we achieved just half of our renewable heating and cooling targets. Now, whatever about those, come back to the first one, that we have nearly achieved our EU transport target. But surely the only reason we did that is because of COVID and no one was going anywhere, Dennis.
So COVID had a little effect, but actually not as much as you might think. So for about the last 10, 15 years, we've been working towards these 2020 targets. We've been looking forward to it for about 10 years. And so this was one of the big results this year, is that we can finally say how we did against those 2020 targets. And these, the ones you're talking about now, relate specifically to the amount of renewables energy that we use. And there was two targets we had from the EU. One was an overall amount of renewable energy, and one was in transport. And so the transport target was for about 10% of all of our transport energy to come from renewable sources. And the main way that we're addressing that is that every time you go to a petrol or diesel pump in any forecourt in Ireland, there's a certain amount of biodiesel or biogasoline blended into the petrol or diesel that you buy every day. You probably don't even realise it, but that's actually how most of the renewable transport that we use, renewable energy and transport. And what we've been doing over the last number of years is upping the blending rates of that. So actually, because it's just a blending ratio with the fuel used, because we used less, it was really more to do with the blending than the actual fact that we used an awful lot less. But certainly it actually helped a little bit in other areas. For instance, the fact that we flew an awful lot less actually helped with our target.
But we've also been told that both road, diesel and petrol use and the related CO2 emissions have returned to close to pre-pandemic levels now following the easing of those restrictions. So I suppose, you know, whatever progress has been made, be it for the because of the pandemic and less movement, less mobility by people and equipment and that, and whatever about the greater awareness that we all have and understanding that we all have now of the real damage being done, and that it's not just about your look, it's a little bit of rain here and a little bit of this there, that it's real damage that could cause the changes in the world's atmosphere in the decades and centuries to come. The issue still emerging from your gender balance is that while we have some done, there's a lot more to do, and there is that rather negative point that Ireland is, by many commentators' views, unlikely to reach our targets by 2050.
Yes, so you're right that we can see in more recent figures from the monthly figures from 2021 that in kind of the second half of the year in July and August, basically after the easing of the restrictions, we do see transport energy use kind of rebounding back up to close to where it was, or in some cases exactly where it was before the pandemic. And I think that's probably going to be no surprise to anybody who's back out on the roads. You can see and feel just the increase in traffic. So yeah, it's definitely worth noting that actually that big reduction that we had in 2020, that's in transport, that's unlikely to cause any kind of long-term change, especially in our driving habits, by itself, that we're already seeing a rebound back. So it hasn't fundamentally solved anything really about the long-term transition, this one-year kind of blip, if you like.
All right, and it's the 2020 SEAI Energy Balance. Some of the key points, again, total energy consumption fell by 8.8%. Total transport energy use was down by over a quarter, 26%. Oil product use decreased by 16.5%, which is the largest annual reduction observed to date. The single largest reduction of oil product use was the two-thirds drop in jet kerosene used for international aviation, as Dennis pointed out earlier. Some of the key points in terms of energy-related CO2 emissions, which we were talking about earlier, almost half of the CO2 reductions are due to the drop in international aviation. I wonder, should we all just give up flying altogether to help the world climate? Reductions in road diesel and petrol use lowered road-related CO2 emissions by 2 million tonnes. Reductions in peat, which would be interesting of this county given the bogs and Bordnamona and all of that, saved 1 million tonnes in peat-related carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere, which is good news. And finally, some of the key points from improvements in renewable energy. 42% of all electricity generated in 2020 came from renewable sources, mainly wind energy, and Ireland succeeded against its EU 2020 renewable energy target for transport and just missed its renewable energy target for electricity. So, some of the good points and some of the things that we have to be concerned about from the SEAI Energy Analysis Balance Energy Balance Report for the year 2020. And Dr. Dennis Dineen is Energy Statistics Analyst with the SEAI. Thank you for that, Dennis.
Thank you, Graham. Thanks for having me.
And indeed, thank you also for that explanation of greenhouse gas emissions and carbon footprint. Now we all understand it a bit better, I hope.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Regarding our mentions earlier of the Catholic Church and JJ Power sent us in a number of points as to how the Catholic Church discriminates against certain sections of the community. I mean, the contrary point would be those are the rules of the club, you know, and whatever, as we said earlier. A regular listener has emailed us, we won't give the name. It says, some of the reasons given by the Catholic Church as to why married priests are not allowed. It's a vocation, so one cannot have a partner in a family as all the priest time is required to do the job. That's the Catholic Church's view. But yet, Church of Ireland priests who are married can find plenty of time to do the job and take care of their families. Priests, another excuse offered by the Catholic Church, priests are paid a relatively small stipend linked to how wealthy the diocese is, and this would not be enough to care for a family. Church of Ireland get on, you know, much fewer members than Catholic Church's members. The diocesan houses are for priests while they're serving in the parish. When retired, they generally share in a house with many bedrooms and a couple of sitting rooms and kitchens. Again, they say that this is not suitable for families. You often think, by the way, when priests, do we often consider that when they retire, where do they go to live? They have to give up the diocesan house. Very uncertain time for them. And the listener concludes by saying, as the job of priests includes dealing with families and their difficulties, how can these men fully understand and appreciate the workings of family life and the problems often encountered when they have no personal experience of same? So are the views of one listener in regards to that. I think one of the biggest issues affecting men, priests in the Catholic Church is loneliness. It has to be. You know, you're living in that old house on your own. In some cases, I know they share or whatever else. There's got to be huge loneliness involved. Irrespective of what age you are, when you're young and you see what's going on around you, and the old hormones might still be active in relation to that. But what about when you get on in years, you know, and you possibly say to yourself, what now? And, I mean, I have enormous regard for those many priests out there who are doing great, great jobs serving their communities. And, I mean, nothing but condemnation for those who brought the priesthood into disrepute, or indeed other vocations, whether it be those in religious orders or whatever, by abusing women in the mother and baby homes, by abusing children. And we know how well that's been catalogued at this stage. But just on that topic of men, you know, the Catholic Church being so patriarchal and men only, And we've talked in the past about the idea of women having to get churched. Can you believe that? Every time I hear that, because having given birth, they weren't considered pure again until they went to church to be blessed and their bodies made pure. How primitive was that? But all these things are not just exclusive to the Catholic Church, and this is not an anti-Catholic Church rant or anything. I'm just trying to get out there different perspectives, and hopefully people will see different sides of the argument. Anyway, let's talk about the impact on communities. Somebody said to me at the weekend, do you know, they don't want us in the banks anymore. They hate to see us coming. There'll come a time in the not too distant future when there'll be no banks. We won't be able to go into the bank manager and say, hey, John Joe, give us about a million or two there, will you? I want to build a shed in the back garden. Those days would seem to be gone. Four Kildare areas lost their Bank of Ireland branches over the weekend. Let's begin in Selbridge. They might have qualified for the semi-final of the football championship, but we don't know where we're going to get money for the party. Councillor Ida Cusson, independent councillor, good morning.
Good morning, Clem.
Selbridge lost their Bank of Ireland branch at the weekend. What kind of an impact do you think it's going to have?
Oh, look, Clem, what do you think? I suppose if you just look at the website, or just Google Bank of Ireland Selbridge, and it says permanently closed. What a terrible statement to have for your local branch there in your town. A town of 22,000 people are thereabouts as well. There's no ATM, no personal banking, nothing for the small businesses, community groups. And then they tell you go off to the post office. Yeah, lots of local businesses, people on the street stopping you and saying, did you see the bank is closed? What are we going to do? How awful it is. And I can only agree with all of that.
Is there another bank in the town?
Well, there is, in fact. And the thing about that is we have an AIB, and long may that stay operational, because they surely must be in the same position as Bank of Ireland, who are saying, you know, for operational reasons and the nature of changing of banking, that they needed to up sticks and go. And maybe the AIB might be of the same mind come someday soon. We don't know.
Or maybe all the Bank of Ireland customers will now switch banks, which is a very easy thing to do, and go to AIB.
Exactly, and it is too. And they're telling you to go into your post office. You'll be familiar with Selbridge. We have a post office, thankfully. Thankfully, we still have. And it's a small post office. And during the recent times, of course, very few people could be permitted in at any one time. But if you imagine that everyone who used to go to Bank of Ireland to do their paper transactions, to do lodgements, things they like to physically go in for, can now go into, or are told to go into the post next door. The post office.
But come here, Ada. Selbridge is a town of 20,000 plus.
Yeah.
And maybe 22 or 23,000, certainly 20,000 plus. I find it difficult to understand why a bank branch would be deemed to be. Because let's face it, this is all about money. This is about saving costs. This is about protecting profit margins. It's not for the benefit of society or for the benefit of the people of Selbridge or anything else that Bank of Ireland have closed 88 branches in the Republic and more up north. This is about that great, great word, rationalisation, you know, streamlining operations. You can use all the euphemisms you like, but this is about protecting the profit margins. So what can be the justification in your view? Is it that the 25,000 people in Selbridge are all going to AIB and very few to Bank of Ireland?
Well, they probably don't seem to care where you go. And I always look to persons like my own mum, even, who's 86. And, you know, for the last couple of years, she'd say, I can't go into the bank. I won't say what bank, but I can't go into the bank because it's all gone customer unfriendly. I can go online, I can use a machine. If I walk in the door, they tell me go over to the machine. There's no checks anymore. And you see, young people are different. Most young people, they move their money around by their phones or their watches, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it has become a different place for many of us in our community to just go into our bank lately. So the banks themselves have orchestrated their own downfall in customer footfall, if you like.
Well, they would say that they're streamlining services. I mean, I can go on my mobile.
They can dress it up how they like.
While you're talking to me now, Ida, I can go on my mobile phone here and I can send you a million just for the party for Selbridge and the football. You know, by just pressing a button. here and there and doing it. And yes, you made the very important point here that this won't be of huge concern to the younger cohort of people who go on their smartphones and, you know, move their money between accounts and this and the other. But it is of huge concern to those people, the vast majority, I'd say, who use banks because they're not comfortable doing stuff like this on the internet.
Yeah, and it wasn't that long ago that on Post, you know, were advocating that instead, well, the welfare situation was that any of your payments, including your OAP, you could do your transactions instead into your bank account. So now, if you've already done that, you've moved from going to the post office for your normal pension payment, you can instead go to your bank for it. But now they've closed your bank. So well, now they want you to toddle back to, you know, it's very confusing for people. It's not acceptable anyway. We're entitled as a 22,000+ population in Selbridge to have a branch office. We're not even some small place way out in the country somewhere that it would even try to justify the population or the footfall.
I have to say that Selbridge stood out to me as an outlier in terms of this because most of the other bank branches that were closed were in very small areas. Now I'm going to hurt people now by saying like Kilcullen and Monastereven that we're going to be talking about in a moment. But in terms of Selbridge, a town with a population of 22,000 people, I find it difficult to grasp the rationale behind Bank of Ireland closing that particular branch. Stay with us, Ida, for a minute, because I just want a quick word on Leakslip, because we were to be joined by Councillor Bernard Caldwell, who tells us that he's now in the city and it's very noisy there and he's not available to take the call. Kevin, let's go to Monastereven then, and Councillor Kevin Duffy, Fine Gael Councillor. Kevin, that's a big blow to Monastereven, is it not, as well?
It is indeed, Clem, and I suppose you say smaller towns, and except Monastereven, a population of 5,000, there is a difference in ourselves and Selbridge, but I suppose you also have to look at other demographics, and Ida touched on it there, you know, an older population. I think, you know, areas like Monastereven, Cullen possibly even have a higher population of older people in the community. And they're the ones that are going to be impacted by a decision like this the most, is elderly people and people who have limited access to transport. Because if you're in Monastereven now, you're going to have to travel to Kildare town if you need to go into a bank. Now, I do accept this. We're very fortunate here in Monastereven to have a very welcoming staff and offices of on post and credit union. So there is an amount of services that will be delivered through them two facilities, and that will obviously help to strengthen them facilities in our town, and hopefully they can grow. So, you know, I do accept that it is a huge loss.
Kevin, is there another bank branch of any other entity, AIB or whatever, in Monastereven?
There isn't, no, Clem. There's only our post office.
So as of Friday, Monastereven has no bank?
That's correct, Clem.
Have you got an ATM anywhere?
We do within Selfs, one within Supervalue and Fitzpatrick's Garage. But the unfortunate thing, and I spoke to Bank of Ireland about this at Lent, was there any possibility of leaving the external ATM within Market Square? Because obviously when the shops close, that's it, there's no access to an ATM machine. So unfortunately, that wasn't possible due to servicing and operational requirements. As you can imagine, it was going to cost them money to do that, and it wasn't an option.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. It's going to cost them money, and this is what this closing of these bank branches is all about. So Monastereven now has no bank branch, and people have to, if they want to use a bank, other than the couple of services that Unpost does, which would be rather limited now in terms of banking terms, people will have to travel to Kildare town, you say?
Yeah.
And what's public transport like out of Monastereven to Kildare town?
Listen, Clem, it's not that bad. We've obviously the green bus service there, so obviously you can very cheaply.
Yeah, it's still very inconvenient though that you can't get down to the bank anymore.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose one other set point, Clem, is the loss of the Bank of Ireland off Dublin Road and Market Square. It's an area in Monastereven that you particularly might be aware of. The Dublin Road has a lot of derelict buildings, and it's an area that we've struggled to to regenerate over the years, and the loss of the bank out of that space only goes to further decline that area of Monastir.
That's an interesting point you make there, Kevin. Indeed, and it applies to Selbridge, and we'll be talking to Tracy O'Dwyer in Kilcullen in a moment. Is it's blow to the general? These bank branches are all located in the heart of communities.
And when
they close down, it's a blow to the heart of the community, the town centre or the village centre.
Yeah, and it means it's another vacant premises. And, especially, as I said, on the Dublin Road, we have a lot of vacant premises, and to see another one gone, it just adds another blow to that situation. Now, we have recently, through Kildare County Council, applied for Towns and Village Renewal to do a master plan scheme of that area. And I suppose it'll have to be another building that we include into the mix of what could it be post the bank.
Yeah. Okay, well, Kevin, we'll let you go there. Thank you for that, because we're going to take Tracy O'Dwyer in just a minute. But Ida, Leakslip, just for a minute, I know you're familiar with the area. The branch that closed in Leakslip, which again, I find it very difficult to understand, is the bank branch that's associated to the Intel operation. Now, given that there's thousands of people working in Intel, I find it hard to understand why that particular branch has been closed, but at least Leakslip would still have a Bank of Ireland branch within the town.
Yeah, I gather it's partial closure or partial loss of services, but I don't fully know, because I know that from talking to people on the street, what they seem to have gotten by letters rather than anything in Leakslip. But as you say, maybe they expect everybody in Intel to use some kind of a chip to do their banking or something, But,
yeah.
I mean, for us, we, as Kevin just said there, we will now, we have a lack of our local banking. We have additional use now of our very small post office, which is lovely, and it is small. We now need, obviously, a bigger post office. And we have an empty commercial premises on our main street, another one. And, the banks were bailed out. They're bailing out on us and leaving us stranded, basically. And it is to do with their own finances and not
all right.
Certainly.
Okay, and by the way, let's remember also the communities of Enfield and Eden Derry, who also have lost branches. They're just on the fringes here, and they'll be blows to their towns as well. That's Ida Custin. Thank you, Ida, for your time. Let's Clontarf, let's freshen, and let's go to Kilcullen now, where Fine Gael Councillor Tracy O'Dwyer. Tracy, a big blow to Kilcullen.
Absolutely, Glenn. It was definitely an end of an era last Friday, and as Brian Byrne recently wrote a piece which chronicled the start of banking in Kilcullen, which is nearly over 100 years of banking, it was a blow last Friday and a sad day, but like the other councillors have said, we're very fortunate in Kilcullen that we have a post office and a credit union, so it's now time to support our credit unions and post offices, because they've always been to the core of the community and to people. So, I would hope that we would support them. But, definitely it was a huge blow to the town and the surrounding areas, not just the town.
And notwithstanding what you say about the post office and the credit union, but the bank branch in a small community like Kilcullen, it's kind of a beating heart of the community. It sort of made a statement that this community is important because there is a banking entity right in the middle of the town.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but I suppose the bank, and I can only speak to the bank in Kilcullen, it closed there at the start of the pandemic, and it was difficult to get them to reopen, to be perfectly honest, and when they did, it only reopened from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock, which is not really conducive to business, and actually all lodgements of coin had stopped back in 2017, and like Councillor Cusson and Councillor Duffy had said, the personal touch was gone from the bank in Kilcullen anyway. And like Ida Cusson had said there, my own dad would go in every Friday. But if he got stuck, and it was only down to the kindness of the staff there, they didn't have to, somebody would help him out. But it is that age group, and not even that age group, not everybody has a smartphone or wants to do their banking online. So, it definitely is going to have an impact on people. And after the difficult 18 months to navigate now something new again, it's a challenging time for people. There's no doubt about that.
And regarding banking online, even though I'm reasonably proficient with banking online and doing things on my smartphone and moving stuff between accounts and paying bills and that, I'm always concerned about the security aspect of that. Once I open my accounts on my smartphone, whether my phone could be hacked or whatever else. And if that's a worry for me, I can just imagine how worrying it would be for people who are not too comfortable on technology and love the idea. And there is also this area of isolation. I know the bank isn't the only one in the community, but there is that social aspect of people going into their bank, building a relationship with the local staff, who were always, you know, in all these bank branches, were very forthcoming and welcoming and whatever.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not the most tech savvy, as everybody knows, but, you know, even my own husband, Anil Hayes, doesn't have a smartphone and would never consider the banking online. Do you know, it's not an age profile thing. For whatever reason, people just may not be comfortable with it. And like you say, you know, we see everyone getting these phone calls at the moment. And
yeah.
Older people in particular are very fearful for everything, do you know, and they're an easy target. And this is a huge change. And we understand how you're hacked and whatever. So when you've built in all of that fear along with worrying about am I doing it right or have I to get a new phone, you know, I think it's certainly a worry for people. But I suppose they're just to say, you know, obviously like all the councillors there, we're here at the end of the phone if anyone needs assistance. There is a support for over 65s that Bank of Ireland have opened. There is a phone number there. It's a 1-800-946-146 number. But, you know, it might be easier. We're happy to help them in any way we can to navigate this transition.
All right.
As are the post office staff, and, you know, they will certainly help, and the credit union staff.
Well, people will have to vote with their feet now and go to their local post office or credit union or indeed the other bank branch that might be in your community. That number that Tracy just gave out for Bank of Ireland, customers who want to find out more, 1-800-946-146. That's a free phone number, 1-800-946-146. But a big blow to the communities of Kilcullen, to Selbridge, to Monastreven, to Enfield, to Eden Derry, and indeed that partial closing of the Intel branch in Leixlip as well. Thank you indeed, Tracy, for that. That's Councillor Tracy O'Dwyer and the other councillors, Councillor Kevin Duffy, both Fine Gael councillors there, and Independent Councillor Ida Cusson, on that, just reflecting the blow to those communities.
Sports Review Monday on Kildare Today.
Yes, indeed. As we head towards 11, let's review the situation following the weekend GAA Club Championship action. The way is now clear for the semi-finals in all three grades. In the senior, Selbridge versus Sarsfields, Naas versus Maynooth. In the intermediate, Ballymore versus Leixlip, Kilcock versus Sallins. And in the junior, Rathcoffey v Robertstown, Kilcullen v Kill. We'll be joined by Seamus Dillon in a moment to talk about the matches he watched. But first, Ger McNally. Good morning, Ger.
Good morning, Clem.
Chair, the games you were on duty for over the weekend in St. Conlon's Park, where you were focusing on the senior action.
Yeah, well, there was two senior and two intermediate, but I'll just talk about the senior first. And yesterday's game, Selbridge versus Athy in the quarterfinals, and county champions Athy dethroned, beaten by a single point in the end by Selbridge, 1-9 to 11 points. A dramatic ending because Athy did have an opportunity to level things up in the fourth minute of injury time from a free kick, but unfortunately for James Eaton, his shot went agonisingly just past the post. It was so close to going over, and really unfortunate for somebody who's been such a great servant for Athy down through the years. But I suppose that's just football, and on the day it didn't go quite right for Athy. Selbridge got a great start. They got a goal after 7 minutes through Aaron Brown, and they led by 1-4 to 6 points at half time. Selbridge at one stage in the second quarter scored 4 points in a row to lead by 1-8 to 7 going into the final quarter. But Athy really came on strong in that final quarter. They scored 4 of the last 5 points to get back to within a single point, put themselves within touching distance, but couldn't quite manage to get that equalising score. And
yeah.
The county champions bow out. It's been a tough year for them. They've had a lot of injuries. They had Kevin Feely and David Hyland back yesterday, and looks much better for us. But it's Selbridge now who go on to face against Sarsfields. And although they were very good at parts yesterday, they have to improve as well. They had opportunities to kill that game off, and from their point of view, they didn't quite get rid of a tie and left them hanging in there.
Okay.
And they almost paid for it.
Naas were much too strong for Carberry.
Much more comfortable win on Saturday for Naas. Yeah, Derek Kerwin really stood out, and I suppose it's a chance now for some young players around the county now to catch the eye of the watching new county management team. And Johnny Doyle and Anthony Rainbow were in the stands looking on as Kerwin scored 8 points. The only black mark for a tie was that one of the other young county stars, Alex
Byrne. For Naas, you mean?
Nace, Alex Byrne limped out with a hamstring injury. Also, James Bourke, the two of those were injured in the first 20 minutes of the game. But Nace's panel is so strong that they were able to brush that off. They led by 12 points to 6 at half time, had a really strong third quarter to lead by 18 points to 8 going into the final quarter. And although Owen O'Flaherty pulled back a goal for Carbery from the penalty late on, it really didn't make any difference as Nace pulled away to win by 21 points to 111.
So, Selbridge versus Sarsfields, Nace versus Maynooth. A look at the intermediate now. Seamus, Dylan, we'll begin with you. You watched one of those intermediate games.
Yeah, I watched Leixlip versus Ballaghy Clem. A tight game in the opening quarter, but it was 4 points each after 15 minutes. Points from Jack Barrett from Freeze and Brian McGrath and Seamus Hannafin and Jimmy Hyland. And from there to the half time break, Jimmy Hyland hit 1-3 to leave the 1-2 to leave the lads, the Ballaghy lads, 1-6 to 4 points ahead at that half time break. Two early points in the second half from Phil Murphy and Highland again in the 34th minute, but from there to the end it was all about Leixlip. They scored, they outscored the Ballateague by 1-8 to a point in that closing 26 minutes. Ballateague getting one score in that 54th minute, and that was all they had. But a goal from Conor Lawler in the 43rd minute brought it back level at 1-8 each, and it was Leixlip who ran out winners then. Two late points from Paddy Maher and the Jack Barrett free. Jack's, that was his 9th point of the game. And they move forward now to play Ballymore Eustace in the semi-final. They met in an earlier round, in round one. And there was a point between them. Again, Leixlip left this late to come from behind. Okay. They were 9-2 behind. So that'll be all to play for again.
All right. In that, and Jared, the games you watched...
Yeah, Ballymore Cusswell winners over Nurney to book their place in the semi-final. It was 118-105, and really Ballymore scored after 13 seconds. And from that moment on, it always looked like they would get the victory to progress. And Nurney did get a goal back late in the game. It was Brian Conway who scored on the rebound, but Ballymore quickly got a goal themselves then in the 59th minute. Simon Murphy with that, and they easily progressed through to the semi-finals. Elsewhere yesterday afternoon, another easy win then as well, Kilcock against St. Kevin's. St. Kevin's were right in this game in the first half, but they gave away two really soft goals. Darryl McCarter got the first for Kilcock, then Shane Farrell early in the second half, and Farrell had a really, really good game in the full forward line for Kilcock alongside Shane O'Rourke. And by the time they got the third goal from Sean O'Sullivan in the 53rd minute, Kilcock were well on the way into the last four, and they finished up winners on a scoreline of 3-14-1-8 over Kevin's.
They did indeed, and that leaves the semi-final lineup Kilcock versus Salins. Was there another game you watched, Jerry, in that intermediate?
Ballymore versus Nurney, so Ballymore versus Leixlip,
right.
And Seamus watched that Leixlip game, yeah.
And Kilcock and Kilcock versus Salins. Who watched that game, Kilcock versus Salins? Was that at the weekend? No,
that was Salins came through last weekend.
In the junior, Rathcoffey versus Robertstown, Kilcullen versus Kill will be the semi-finals there. And just before we go, Seamus, you watched an intermediate hurling semi-final yesterday as well, where Maynooth beat Moorfield.
Yeah, last year's intermediate champions Maynooth, only a couple of months ago, Clem, they won the 2020 championship, and they were back in action in the semi-final. And Moorfield, who had been impressive against Selbridge in the quarter-final, turned out to be a cracking game, 3-16-1-19. The score, goals from Tyke Ford, Kevin Dunn and Donald Qualter left the Maynooth guys 3-13-1-8 ahead after 38 minutes. But from there to the end, Moorfield put on an excellent display, outscored them by 11 points to 3, got back to within a point on the 56th minute, and Maynooth were hanging on at the very end. Two late points from David Qualter and Cahill McCabe left them 3-16-1-19 winners. They now meet Nace in that UMPC intermediate hurling final. But an excellent game, and we spoke about it before, Clem, that Moorfield have improved so much, and the ones to be watching for the coming years.
All right, okay, lads, we leave it there. Our coverage over the weekend was in association with Pat Keogh Skoda Ballybritis, the Midlands' number one Skoda dealer since 1996. Chair, do we know at this stage when those semi-finals are fixed for?
The junior and intermediate semi-finals, along with the one hurling senior championship quarter-final, are all down for next Saturday and Sunday, and then the following weekend, I believe, the senior football championship semi-finals will be played. Although, of course, the fact that Nace and Selbridge are in both the senior hurling and football semi-finals adds a little bit of an extra layer of complication for those fixtures. But I believe it'll be 2 weeks for the senior semi-finals.
All right, no let up for the wicket. We'll be at it again next weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Full coverage of all those games here on KFM Sports. Be Beat Saturday and Sports Beat Sunday. And also all the ladies' county finals are fixed for next weekend as well. So it's going to be even busier. And thanks indeed to Ger, to Seamus Dillon and Tara Dillon. Or not Tara Dillon. I think I just married Seamus and Tara there. Tara Byrne, of course, who covered the junior games for us over the weekend. Thanks for that, lads.